This next man has been at Hope. This is his third Hope conference, and he always creates a ruckus. Jello Biafra.
Oh no, a podium. Do I have to adopt my dad's posture now in order to communicate with everyone here? What can we do about this? Okay, hang on. Let me unfold my stuff here. That's not going to do a whole lot of good, because I still have to hold on to it either way. So appreciate the offer. But anyway, let me unpack my goodies here. Oh, we have that goodie. We have that one. What's in there? That's in there. Okay. No, that should go. Where can I put this so it'll be logical? What? Storing this on a computer does not always make sense. Well, I know they aren't all printouts of websites. See, this isn't a printout of a website. This is Arnold Schwarzenegger campaign literature. If there ever was a reason for ecological reasons to outlaw junk mail, this is it. There has got to be a way that'll pass legal muster to say if you're going to send unsolicited crap in the mail to somebody, it can only be on a 3x5 card. And then if they want the whole catalog, they send the card back and get it. Instead of getting all this stuff in the mail that turns trees in my state into, or turns, you know, areas in my state that used to have trees on them into moonscapes and everything else. This is the only campaign literature I ever saw for Schwarzenegger, and look what thick reading it is, too. I want to be the people's governor. I will work honestly without fear or favor to do what is right for the people of California. I am running for governor to end business as usual in California. Let's bring California back. What does that mean? Yeah, exactly. What are some of his... Oh, fiscally conservative government with Republican principles. Republican principles? Oxymoron, if I've ever heard one. Repealed outrageous car tax increase, which I got a $3 refund for. Basically, this wasn't a recall election. It was a coup. And granted, the governor before that, Gray Davis, was not a very sympathetic figure, kind of the East Bay Ray of politics, if you will. He right-wing corporate Clintonoid Democrat who was, like typical Democrats of today, was more interested in making deals than being a leader. And eventually it caught up with him, and now they've got him in. This is very important for two reasons. Now Bush has a new state to cheat in this fall, because they might be watching Florida a little more closely. And the old Governor Davis and the Lieutenant Governor, Cruz Bustamante, had filed a $9 billion lawsuit against Enron and Kenneth Lay for ripping off our state in the corporate-staged energy crisis. But since the state attorney general's office didn't file it and the governor did, the governor can withdraw the lawsuit at his pleasure. And so as soon as Schwarzenegger got in, and he had been meeting behind closed doors with people like Kenneth Lay, Michael Milken, and others before the recall ever got started, you know, all you got to do to save $9 billion in pirate booty is pay a few tens of millions and change the governor. And that's what they did. Schwarzenegger quietly settled with Enron out of court for nothing, as far as I know. That's the real reason he's in, is business as usual in California. More junk mail recently appeared. This one says, "Dear friend," crossed out in machine marking, "Jello." Will you become one of the first to join the Bush-Cheney team as a charter member of California? I would be thrilled to tell the president you are with us. So thrilled, we even have a fake autographed photo addressed personally to me.
Thank you for your early commitment and dedication as a charter member to Campaign California. Grassroots leaders like you are the key to building a winning team.
To win back our country from this fascist cowboy, basically. Anyway, imagine, you know, you talk about everything's got to be on websites, everything's got to be downloaded, and what happens if the whole thing crashes or disappears? I had somebody who spent years writing two film scripts that were his life's work, only had it on a hard drive. Guess what got stolen out of his car? And he didn't have backup copies. I mean, cyber terrorism is a legitimate fear at times, so if you don't want to lose something that's important to you, back it up on something other than just the digital netherworld and all. You could regret it later. But I am touched with the nostalgic packaging this time around. We have 1984 over here, and I even got one of these little perforated cards. I never thought I'd see one of those again, reminding me of those good old ha-ha days in high school when I was called into the counselor's office and told it was time to plan my career and to fill out a little multiple-choice form of what my interests and skills were, which I filled out, you know, honestly, best of my ability. And a while later, one of these cards came back that only counselors could read, apparently. And it said I should spend my high school years preparing to become a dental hygiene assistant. Imagine how often I visited that counselor in the future and all. When I first came here in 2000, things were so comparatively innocent compared to what we have now. All you had to worry about was getting your hand slapped or fined for the most part of illegally supposedly sharing software, downloading music, ring around the rosy with, ha ha ha, you can't catch me, I'm the gingerbread man, and freeing Kevin Mitnick. Not anymore. Many more Kevin Mitnicks in jail now, and I don't mean to downgrade what happened to him, which never should have happened in any way, but now what have we got? But, you know, there's at least almost 1,000 people being held without bail, without trial, can't talk to a lawyer and their family. Now that we've gone into the concentration camp business in Guantanamo Bay, another 10,000 held incommunicado in Iraq, and we've heard how some of them have been treated, and another 700-plus still being held without trial or without a hearing in this country who were rounded up after September 11th, and they just threw away the key, locking them up just in case they might be a terrorist. If they get away with this now, who do they come? I should gesture this way, shouldn't I? Who do they come for next? A couple days ago, we hit the 1,000 mark in dead Americans killed in Iraq. But of course, in our happy news for happy people with happy problems on TV, they don't mention that we've killed somewhere around 20,000 or more Iraqis, not to mention the death toll from the sanctions we had on that country from Gulf War number one until we went in again, starving people, depriving them of medicine so children were dying of as easily preventable diseases as diarrhea. Estimated death toll from those sanctions between 1 and 2 million people. That's not fighting terrorism. That's not liberating anybody. That is genocide. And that's how people view us in that part of the world. And another thing they don't bother to tell you is, okay, we only lost 1,000 guys, and look how we kicked their ass over there. Last March, the Pentagon released some figures on how many troops have been sent home for injury or illness. 29,000. And this is not people who just got grazed by a stray bullet that broke the skin or got the sniffles or something. These are people who've had their arms or their legs blown off. The Kevlar will kind of protect you from bullets, but not roadside bombs when there's no armor put on the Humvees in the first place because they had to save money for B-2 bombers and everything instead. People who may never walk again because they have spinal injuries, things like that. The illness they're talking about, in all likelihood, is the latest mutation of Gulf War syndrome. You know, and what helps cause Gulf War syndrome? Well, remember John Ashcrack in one of his many, "The sky is falling, terrorists are going to attack us all summer," that never seems to happen. He claimed that they were going to blow up dirty bombs, meaning get a regular bomb, coat it with radioactive material, blow it up in a crowded area like this and kill thousands of people through radiation poisoning. Guess who's using dirty bombs right now? We are. In Iraq, shells coated with depleted uranium, and sure, they'll go through the armor of a tank and blow it up from the inside, but what have you got left over? Radiation. We left 40 tons of depleted uranium behind in Gulf War I, which may explain why the cancer rate in southern Iraq then went up 700%. We used it in Kosovo, too. Hey, Kosovars, come on back. We got rid of Milosevic and all his butchers, and see, we left your land happily aglow. And yes, we're using it this time. And you know how many people are now living on disability from the first Gulf War in this country? 236,000. So if you know anybody who you care about who's in the military or thinking of joining, now might be a real good time to do whatever it takes to talk them into not joining or not going over there. Six months in the brig ain't half as bad as living the rest of your life with splitting headaches, double vision, got the shakes all the time, your brain plays tricks on you, can't work anymore, kids being born with cancer and stuff like that. There is a price our soldiers are paying over there. Of course, the USA Patriot Act is still with us. And once those kind of laws get on the books, they seem to be very hard to get rid of. Notice how upfront John Kerry has not been about repealing the Patriot Act. And some of you may recall the Total Information Awareness proposal, bringing Larry Ellison's wet dream to fruition, where they would hire a company called Choice Point, the same ones who helped rig the election in Florida, to try and interface all the little private databases on everybody that the credit card companies and the insurance companies and the government have out of one big file, onto one big file, and know everything about you. And that idea got torpedoed for now, but expect to see that again. Ironically, the one they wanted to put in charge of it was John Poindexter, who should still be in jail for his Contragate crimes. Ollie North's right-hand man and all the drug-running assassinations and our terrorists called the Contras, killing 30,000 people in Nicaragua. Thought we'd bring him back. And then, I guess there's been panels on this, too, about uses and abuses of the smart cards that are already coming in Europe. And one person who many people in this room may think is kind of a hip guy proposed in March 2002 requiring all manufacturers of computers to include an ID card reader so that in order to log on at all, you'd have to put your smart card in, and then whatever you did would all be known and recorded by the people who issue the smart cards. He said in this talk, quote, "Privacy is the new urban myth." Guess who said that? Howard Dean. Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, our buddy's Choice Point also now sell at Walmart for $39.77 a little spy-in-a-box kit called Background Check, which is software where you can tap into Choice Point's online database and look up all the dirt on anybody you want. Don't have to wait for Poindexter. You can do it yourself. Last June 4th, Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI, proposed a new domestic spy agency within the FBI to function as a domestic CIA. Restrictions, zero. In other words, basically legalizing what they already do illegally anyway. Another one that's supposed to come into effect this month, but I haven't heard whether it actually has yet, so I'm doubting it. You heard of CAPS 2? Another one of Ashcraft's little things of having everybody who wants to get on a plane have to submit to all these background checks, which, of course, they can then all give to Choice Point or whatever, and decide whether or not you're even allowed to fly on a plane at all. Green, you're okay. Yellow, give them the third degree at the airport every single time. Red, you will never get on a plane again. Who might be red flagged? Well, not a real efficient way to find terrorists who can forge IDs at will anyway. But one of the people who got red flagged about a year and a half ago and was not allowed to fly from any airport in North Carolina, much to his surprise, was Doug Stuber. His crime, being head of the North Carolina Green Party. And Stuber reported that the Homeland Security people even brought out a big old notebook of suspected terrorist organizations, and there on the same page, in alphabetical order, were Al-Qaeda and Green Party. Yeah. I mean, that hasn't been used wisely yet, but give them time. I mean, with CAPS, too, even the information is not that interesting to them. They've already got that anyway. It's the submission and acceptance of being spied on that interests them the most. Digital Millennium Copyright Act is still with us. You never heard Carrier Howard Dean even mentioning the existence of that, let alone what should be done with it. And on top of that, I don't know the status of it right today, but a senator, your friend and mine, Senator Orrin Hatch, noted recording artist of 16 CD albums, by the way, of what I'm scared to guess. Apparently, Ashcroft made a religious album years ago, too, but I've never seen one in a thrift store or anything. And Ashcrack also wrote his own patriotic anthem after September 11th, which so far I've only been able to get 30 seconds of. But there he is on CNN in front of the Justice Department podium. Let the eagle soar. And let the ego soar it was. In a rare nod to affirmative action, he called Latino high-ups in the Justice Department into his office and asked them to translate it into Spanish and has people sing it with him before he begins each day of work. Whether this is before or after the Pentecostal prayers, I don't know. I mean, Ashcrack is so out there. I mean, he's practically Taliban material, as many of you probably know, covering up one big metal titty and a statue at the Justice Department with a curtain and everything. For some, Ashcroftian Pentecostal ritual, I mean, he's from Springfield, Missouri, right, who only legalized high school dancing in the late 80s and only under court order. Anyway, Ashcrack, before he takes any oath of office, he covers himself in cooking oil. Too bad nobody brings a match or anything, but anyway, Orrin Hatch is trying to get Senate to fast-track and quickly pass the Inducing Infringements of Copyright Act, outlawing even the construction or possession of any device that might be used to infringe upon corporate copyrighted material. In other words, CD burners, illegal. Peer-to-peer networks, illegal. iPods, illegal. Surely Mr. Wozniak and the others have enough money they can fight this, but we shall see. I mean, some people say, oh, yeah, we can always circumvent that around that anyway, and it'll just create a huge black market, kind of like drugs or beer you had to hide from Elliot Ness, or he'd machine gun you on the Untouchables and everything. But a black market in order to break an unjust law, that hasn't really gotten rid of the marijuana laws yet, has it? So we don't want to see the Inducement Act pass. And they're also trying to sneak it into the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas. You know what that is? You know, like NAFTA on crack, it extends all the worst stuff of that to the rest of South and Central America and the Caribbean. Only Cuba is exempt, so we're doing a Castro a huge favor on this one. It basically says that corporations have the same right as sovereign nations and are equally powerful and can go into any go to the FTAA commission and try and wipe out any other country's law that they say interferes with their right to profit and shake down a country, no matter how poor they are, for blood money, for things like failure to privatize schools, failure to hand over the electricity grid, failure to let Clear Channel eat up all the radio stations, failure to let Rupert Murdoch or somebody worse eat up all the newspapers, etc. And the FTAA is supposed to have the equivalent of the Induce Act in there as well. And as the digital world takes over the workplace, it has constantly been abused and turned into an electronic plantation. And now a new trendy term that's come in the last few months, offshoring. It isn't a great when stocks go up when a company offshores, which means, of course, they take your job and ship it to India or wherever, and many companies even require the people they're about to fire to train the new employees before they're fired. And I'm glad to see, since I came here 4 years ago, there's been a growing interest and respect for hacktivism, as opposed to just hacking for recreation. But one of the big dangers we face in this upcoming so-called election is hacktivism from the other side. Way worse than the hacktivism already done by Choice Point in Florida, detailed in a book called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy by Greg Palast, where they purged all these supposed convicted felons, meaning those Negro voters who might vote for Gore, off the voter rolls. Jeb and Catherine Harris were both in on this. And then Palast actually looked at the printouts and whatnot in the database of what Choice Point was up to, and they had all these people convicted of, you know, it said convicted of a felony in 2004, convicted of a felony in 2007. And he claims he offered this information to the Gore campaign 3 weeks before the regular election, and they turned it down. And even afterwards, when people were up in arms over tens of thousands of people not allowed to vote because they were black in Florida, where was Al Gore? One of many, was he that allergic to being photographed with civil rights leaders of a different skin color, or what? I mean, you know, for anybody who says Nader cost Gore the election, well, there's one of many reasons Gore cost himself that election. But other people, involved in some heavy-duty hacktivism trying to go national with electronic voting, which, of course, is easily altered and rigged, especially when there's no paper trail, is a company called Diebold out of Ohio, whose head, Wally O'Dell, even came right out and said, quote, "I will deliver Ohio for George W. Bush." Guess how? Well, maybe the same thing that happened in Boone City, Indiana, where they got one of these electronic voting gizmos to be all modern. And sure enough, amazing statistics. It reported 144,000 people voted in a place that had only 19,000 registered voters. And for anybody who posts anything questioning whether Diebold's machines work properly or are even intended to work properly, Diebold has been sending out cease and desist letters to net service providers for publishing any of the internal documents showing that their machines might screw up once in a while. Head of the FCC is Michael Powell, the baby Doc Duvalier of the broadcast world. Only reason he got that job is because he's Colin Powell's fat, pasty doughboy-looking son. And he has said, he has called the broadcast industry under-monopolized and said he, quote, has no idea what the public interest is. No wonder he was trying to ram through more laws getting rid of important regulations about media monopoly to allow people like Clear Channel and Fox and Mickey Mouse to swallow up more and more of the outlets we are exposed to that most people believe the information they get on it and, don't really realize what's going on when all the local programming, community affairs programs, and talk shows anywhere to the left of Michael Savage are mysteriously removed from the airwaves. That's Powell's part of the job. Those who rule information and can control it have a much better chance of controlling the world. And there's other smaller ways they're systematically trying to shut off our access to information. Even in San Francisco, now that a 36-year-old yuppie scum named Gavin Newsom is the mayor, who grew up in the Getty Mansion and his whole platform was, I hate homeless people, vote for me. He barely won, by the way, even though he was supposed to win in a walk, but hopefully I'll have time to get to that later. Anyway, even though he did the right thing on gay marriage after holding his finger to the wind and saying, which is more likely to make me president later, and decided he'd allow it, Newsom overall has been poisonous. You know, evictions going way, way up again, and also, suddenly people are getting busted and fined huge amounts of money for putting up flyers on telephone poles or anywhere else. And at the same time, they're trying to get rid of newspaper vending machines and require them all to be put in these special machines they call ped mounts, built by the J.C. Deco company in France, where there's only, say, 6 slots, if that. And if you're the 7th paper on the block, people don't have access to you anymore. And on the back of the ped mounts, billboard space, controlled by guess who? Clear Channel. Handed it to them for free. Another way of restricting our access to information as a way of deliberately dumbing down society to create more people who will fall for things like this. And basically, it creates a society of paranoid, reactionary, angry hummerheads who actually believe what they see on Fox News. You know, not just obedient, but militantly stupid, shall we say. You know, this isn't capitalism anymore with so-called free trade and revolving door between corporations, Pentagon, and other government positions. This is feudalism. It ain't saying capitalism. This is feudalism. Barons and lords and high castles have names like Boeing, Exxon, Microsoft, Oracle, Warner Brothers, McDonald's. And every time we go out and give any of them money for anything, we are their serfs. Little hard to escape that completely. But it's getting to the point where corporations not only get to write the laws and make the laws, they get to enforce them themselves, too. Not just through phony free trade agreements, but your friends and mine, the RIAA, Recording Industry Association of America, becoming more and more of their own enforcement arm, blurring where big business ends and government begins. According to the LA Weekly, their anti-piracy unit, the APU, in Los Angeles has been dressing up to look like police and terrorizing street corner vendors in Latino neighborhoods, seizing their discs and getting photo IDs of them to get their file going. And, you know, it admittedly, well, I'm going to skip that part for now, but, and the RIAA as well, somehow they have the right now to sue thousands of people at random for failure to buy enough of their products. Imagine if Kellogg's got this power or something, too. 12-year-old girl in the projects in this town sued for file sharing. 71-year-old Durwood Pickle in Texas sued for file sharing. And now the normally supposed liberal John Conyers and Howard Berman in Congress are proposing a bill that says if you trade as much as one music file, it's a felony that lands you 5 years in prison. And they justify that by saying, well, each file is a theft of $250. Right. Australia, two guys have already gotten 18-month jail terms for file sharing. They were both suspended this time to make an example out of them, but that doesn't make me feel too comfortable either. All this in spite of a new study from people at Harvard and University of North Carolina who tracked 680 albums over 17 weeks in late 2002 and concluded that overall file sharing increases CD sales for anything that was already sold over 600,000 copies. But they said that they made their model for how much file sharing would really cost anything and would say a total of $2 million in lost sales, while the major labels, or CD sales in general, from 2000 to 2002 fell 139 million units. Maybe because they put out too much crap and because of the Bush economy. And because of the Bush economy, people don't have the kind of disposable income they used to have, especially to buy an album with only one good song on it and a lot of fluff or whatever. Of course, under 600,000 copies, or in the case of my little label, generally under 6,000, we have been hurt a lot more. I was hoping we would bounce back up again, too, like we did with Napster. But that hasn't happened, and it's getting harder and harder to sell an unknown band and break 1,000 copies and break even on the damn thing. Some, but not all of that, is because of file sharing. So I ask again, you know, for the smaller artists, please support the people who are basically a lot of them paying out of their own pocket to make their dream come true and make a few copies of their album. And if they can't get rid of them, they may not make another one. A lot of the bands on Alternative Tentacles, the newer ones, and we're one of the few labels left who will take chances on unknown bands instead of dig up an old punk rock band and try and recycle it again and again and again. I mean, we put out some old stuff too, but I like to put out new stuff. And the bands break up a lot quicker than they used to, in part because they ain't got any money to buy food or gas for the van and get frustrated and all. And I'm not saying everybody should automatically buy into the rock star dream and expect a swimming pool or a free bus or something. But the first time I brought this up when I was first here, somebody later came up to me and lectured me that it was politically incorrect for an artist to ever want any kind of money for their work of any kind. I have a two-word reply for that. Fuck you. It's weird that some of these people who feel that way are the same ones who say that laborers don't get paid enough, but we shouldn't get paid at all. I mean, I'm not asking for showers of money just to be able to pay the bills so I don't wind up working at McDonald's or Siebel or whatever. So, I mean, that's all I'm saying. Meanwhile, the major labels claim because of all this wicked file sharing, we're going broke! We're going broke! To which I can only quote a famous Flipper song and say, well, if you really think they're going broke, take a look at any issue you care to of Billboard magazine. The ones that, you know, this is kind of their Bible of sell, and everything. Here's the Billboard Top 200. What have we got? Top one in this week is Outkast, 7 million copies sold. They have a circle there for everything that's gone gold and sold 500,000, a triangle for everything that's sold gone platinum and sold over 1 million, and almost everything in the top 200 has at least a circle, and most of them have triangles. Some of these are like 10 million copies sold. Norah Jones, 8 million copies sold. Eagles, even now in a repackaging, 2 million copies sold. And for some weird reason, 2 million Americans bought a new Rod Stewart album. The point being, they're not going broke at all. They're just a little worried about cutting executives' mega-million-dollar salaries or something. They ain't going to hear of that. And how many of you know that when the major labels do swipe money through suing a file share or whatever, the artists don't get a damn thing? They're just pocketing it away for themselves. Major labels recently had to settle with several states for price fixing for somewhere around, what was it, $30 or $50 million. Rather than fight it, they just agreed to settle. They knew they were ripping everybody off. And then they settled again out of court with some artists for deliberately underpaying their royalties, again to the tune of about $30 million. The excuse being, we lost their addresses. The addresses of Dolly Parton. The addresses of Puffy Combs, too. He weirds me out. Now, why would anybody take the time for press releases and arranging everything to change their name in mid-career from Puff Daddy to P. Diddy? Can somebody please explain this to me? I mean, is this a diaper fetishist code thing for peeing in your ditties? I have no idea. Major labels are also demanding that online radio broadcasters encrypt their broadcasts so nobody can record stuff off the radio, which they've been trying to find a way to do for 40 or 50 years and failed. But this also restricts access to information because you can't record documentaries or news programs or anything anymore that way either. These are the same people who in 1984 sued Sony to block the sales of VCR machines. The same ones who went all the way to the Supreme Court in 1908 to ban player piano rolls because they thought it was infringing on their copyrights. Maybe they tried to stop the phonograph record in the 19th century because it might interfere with sales of sheet music. And like Ashcrack, these are the same people who say they want to get government off our backs. Unless, of course, it interferes with money they want to make. And speaking of getting government off our backs, anybody planning to go to the Republican National Convention? That's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, you know, some people are hoping for 1 million people in the streets just saying this to the Bush administration and everything they stand for. You'd think some of these cities would learn by now. Eminem coming to town? Marilyn Manson? Glenn Danzig? No problem. Bush comes to town? Call out every reserve cop from a 500-mile radius. There's going to be trouble with the fans and all. I mean, the biggest danger, I think, aside from incredible police violence, is making sure that the word gets out that it even happened. Making sure that the word gets out to people who normally would only watch CNN or Fox or NBC that there were this many people protesting in the first place. Because the other side since Seattle has gotten a little smarter too, haven't they? How many of you even know the year or so, 2 years, year and a half after Seattle, an even bigger group, 70,000 people, swarmed on the Free Trade of the Americas conference in Quebec City in Canada. But ask almost anybody at random you know if they ever heard that happen. Most people will say no, let alone that one of the great Bush quotes happened during that, too.
No. There's not going to be a press conference today. Not in English, not in French, not in Mexican.
Yeah. Another thing they do now is arrest the protest leaders ahead of time, no matter what they've done. In Washington, D.C., before one of the actions against the World Bank and International Monetary Fund meetings, they arrested a bunch of people for the crime of puppet making. In Seattle, they arrested people for possession of gas masks, knowing full well if they ever brought that to court, it would be thrown out, but by the time it went to court, the protests would already have passed on. They do this again and again and again. And my guess is they're not going to be very nice or civil this time. The NYPD's reputation is they're not as likely to fuck with you as they are in L.A. or Philly, but when they do, they really do a good job of it. Just ask Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima or any of them. One of the morals of this story, of course, being if you do go to the protests or are planning to go, it might be worth scouring the thrift stores now for old sports equipment like football helmets, hockey helmets, bike helmets, shoulder pads, what have you. You may wind up needing them. The Japanese learned this clear back in the 60s. I noticed the footage of protesters there. Cops wore helmets. They wore helmets. Cops got batons. They got batons. Cops got shields. They got shields. And, of course, there's nothing the cops and the corporate media like more than if somebody breaks a window at Starbucks or something and they can quickly call it an anarchist riot on the news and ignore all the labor union people who showed up and everything else. Plus, then the cops can say, oh, riot, let's have our police riot now and beat the crap out of everybody. So if you do see somebody there getting ready to do something stupid, you know, put your arms around them and lock them or whatever, stop them, basically. What easier way to disguise an undercover cop than to pull a black baklava over their head and have them claim they're part of the black bloc? It was a little weird in Geneva in the big protests at the G8 summit there a few years ago, the most violent ones to date, that the reports coming in through indie media were that the black bloc people were not only seen conversing with the cops repeatedly, but were never, ever beat up or arrested. What does that tell you? You know, I'm not saying that all black bloc people may be undercover cops any more than every single member of the Weather Underground was undercover cops. Just possibly a significant size of them to screw things up for everybody else unless we stop them and all. So the main point is to get the word out about the protests and why people are really there, that it's not just an anarchist riot. But the reason we're really there is because nobody has shown more disrespect and been more exploitive towards the innocent victims of September 11th than the Bush administration themselves. How many of you feel more secure now that we're occupying Iraq? I mean, statistically, both terrorist attacks and Al-Qaeda attacks have gone way up since we went into Afghanistan. That's how effective this is working. So with all this trumpeting complete with the usual corporate logos on CNN and the other news outlets, handover on June 30th. The Iraqis have their sovereignty back now. No, they don't. We took out the emperor we installed, the guy who used to work for Henry Kissinger, who was a privatization specialist named Paul Bremer, took him out. He got on the plane June 30th to fly home to New Hampshire to, of course, write a cash-in book and get back to what the corporate media said was his real passion in life, teaching gourmet cooking classes. I am touched. But meanwhile, the provisional government now, they must run every single law they want to pass by American generals who have veto power over anything they do, and the U.S. military and any foreign private contractors, including mercenaries, which they call security, are completely exempt from all Iraqi laws. That is not sovereignty. And, you know, did I say this earlier? That no, I didn't. Not this time, anyway. You know, we've killed 20,000 of them already. We're occupying their country. Killed millions, possibly, before that. Even if we wind up killing off and squelching every single person who ever supported Saddam Hussein, every Muslim all over the world who's down with Osama bin Laden, what will their kids be like? Look no further than how young those little boys are throwing rocks at Israeli soldiers, suicide bombings and bombings starting to happen even in Madrid, in Turkey, Morocco, Bali. Even there is your answer. And another thing that doesn't ever seem to get into corporate news is, guess what George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Tony Blair, Paul Wolfowitz, John Ashcraft, Karl Rove, Jeb Bush, Bill Clinton, Rush Limbaugh, Newt Gingrich, Bill O'Reilly, House Speaker Dennis Hastert, House Dictator Tom DeLay, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Rambo Stallone all have in common? They've all been beating their titties for months and months before we went in to have a new bloodbath in the Middle East and Iraq, and not a damn one of them has ever served in the military. Not one. This whole war is being run by chicken hawks. Damned if they're going to send their own kids to fight in Iraq. Ironically, the one who came the closest was George W. Bush, because he supposedly showed up for National Guard duty here and there, and now they're saying, oh, well, all the records are lost. Interesting form of hacktivism, if you will. And now that they can't find the 100 to 500 tons of weapons of mass destruction they knew Saddam had, we're saying, well, it was okay to go in and occupy Iraq anyway in the first preemptive war in our history.
You know, we have to have a preemptive war. We have to attack them just in case they attack us someday.
The same logic Hitler used for invading Austria, Poland, Czechoslovakia, France, and the rest. Same thing. Well, it's okay because, look, we liberated Iraq, you know, out of the Saddam frying pan and into the Halliburton oil well fires. Yeah. Well, Saddam was a bad motherfucker. But does that mean that we now say that it's okay for Canada and Europe and Mexico to invade this country to liberate us from Bush?